Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Hey there, my Tsunami Generation, and welcome to another episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution. And yes, I am a week late, but we will get into that. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and I welcome you back again as we, like I said, we're a week late. Setbacks, Audacity continuously crashing, and just overall, being focused on other projects as part of 132 Productions all led to this happening. So I do want to apologize for that. I initially wanted to have this at least released last Friday, but again, like I said, Audacity crashing several times. Thank you, Audacity. But the reason I wanted to get it out last Friday was because of what we are reviewing on this episode. On this episode, we will be reviewing the 2006 direct-to-DVD animated movie Ultimate Avengers in the spirit of the release of The Avengers, which kick ass! I would love to do a review right now or as part of this episode, but you'll just have to check out Comic Book Crazy, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. When the newest episode of Comic Book Crazy is released in the following week and a half, to find out what my review on that is. But that's here nor there. So, yeah, the 2006 Ultimate Avengers movie released by Marvel based off the Ultimate comic. As such, our synopsis this week will be a combination of the actual plot of the movie and talking about the actual source material. You know, so you can understand. But that's here nor there. We do not have any emails or iTunes comments, so we're just going to get right into said aforementioned synopsis. So let's get started first with cast. We have Justin Gross as Captain America / Steve Rogers, Mark Wooden as Iron Man / Tony Stark, Olivia Dubbo as Black Widow / Natasha Romanoff, Andrew Weir as General Nick Fury, David Boat as Thor, Michael Massey as Dr. Bruce Banner, Fred Tatasciore as the Hulk, Gray DeLuise as Wasp / Janet Van Dyne Pym, Nolan North as Giant Man / Hank Pym, and Nana McNamara as Dr. Betty Ross. Into synopsis, it's the last days of World War II in the European theater, and Steve Rogers, a U.S. soldier known as Captain America due to being enhanced by the super soldier serum, prevents a missile launch by the Nazis, which are soon to reveal to be shape-shifting extraterrestrials led by one taking the form of an SS officer named Herrn Kaiser. Probably screwed up that name, but that's besides the point. The missile explosion, however, sends Roger into a catatonic state as he falls into the icy waters of North America, presumed dead. In the present day, Captain America is found and revived by a SHIELD team led by General Nick Fury, Bruce Banner, and his ex-girlfriend Betty Ross. Not Betsy, but Betty Ross, excuse me. led by a team of government scientists working to recreate the super soldier serum in order to try to stop the real power that backed the Nazis, the alien Chitauri. Banner thinks the super soldier serum is key to him controlling the Hulk that he secretly is, and he is secretly using his blood to try to create a cure instead of using the candidates that have been selected for the rebirth project for the super soldier serum. A Chitauri attacks a SHIELD satellite designed to track Chitauri ships, forcing Nick Fury's superiors, to order the implementation of the Project Avengers, which involves the formation of a team of superheroes. Fury tries to recruit with mixed success. Giant Man, a scientist who used to be working for SHIELD. Wasp, which is Giant Man's wife. Iron Man / Tony Stark, an industrial playboy. Thor, a person who claims to be the genuine Norse deity and can control thunder. And Black Widow, a SHIELD spy. After several setbacks, including a botched mission that leads to all but Black Widow walking away from the team, the heroes unite as the Chitauri attack the Tri-Skeleton and SHIELD. Through all this, Bruce injects himself with the said aforementioned cure that he thinks will work and is actually able to transform into the Hulk and control himself, and joins into the battle against the Chitauri. Although successful against the Chitauri and defeating them, team must then fight an enraged Hulk after Banner, battling the Chitauri, loses control. The team manages to eventually distract the Hulk long enough for Betty to calm him down, and Banner is then incarcerated. The heroes then celebrate their success. So, yes, this is a comic based off a comic book that came out in 2002, February 2002, though it has the cover date of March 2002, entitled The Ultimates. The writers were Mark Millar and Brian Hitch. Brian Hitch has a very interesting, very unique art style. Mark Millar, you know, it's one of those tomato things. But he also ended up going on to write, Civil War and some and Kick-Ass and stuff like that. Yeah, the book had a lot of setbacks, missing deadlines, and there are people who genuinely had problems with Mark Millar's writing style. You know, again, this all goes to, this is part of the development of the Ultimate Universe line at Marvel, which started in 1999 with Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimate Fantastic Four. It eventually included, you know, the X-Men, and ultimately led to them wanting to do alternate versions of basically the Avengers, which is Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, and, you know, said aforementioned characters for this universe. And like I said, they're Ultimates, and of course Mark Millar's writing, and just, you know, how they were used, and sort of more of the darker tones. There were a lot of people who didn't like what they were doing, but we'll get into more of that later. But with that, let's get right into our review of Ultimate Avengers.
We'll be right back.
welcome back, and let's get started with our review of the Ultimate Avengers. And we're going to start with music, and you know, usually you are just probably listening to what would be the theme of whatever I'm reviewing. But unfortunately, I could not find the Ultimate Avengers theme anywhere. So, yeah, you are listening to AC/DC's Shoot the Thrill. But, yeah, the Ultimate Avengers theme, I don't know if I would call this an Avengers theme, because it doesn't remind me of Avengers. It would make a great Captain America theme. P.S., by the way, this is going to be one of those reviews where I really don't like what I watched, and I would say I would want my money back, but, it's Netflix, so... There's too many good stuff that I really don't want my money back, but that's besides the point. But back to music, as I kind of got off track there. But yeah, I mean, it's like a Superman theme, a Captain America theme has lots of brass and that stuff. But unlike a Superman theme, which, again, I'm not saying Superman's not patriotic, but Superman has its sort of own tonal aspect of it to where, you know, can be patriotic, but it's also sort of more space, a grandeur, space-driven, you know, you know, yeah, it makes you think of patriotic things, but it also has this sort of space, sort of Star Wars type of grandeur to it. Again, mostly coming from actor John Williams. But with sort of Captain America, it's all completely patriotic. So, I mean, it has sort of those patriotic tonal sounds that a Captain America theme should have, along with the big brass. It's an okay theme, but again, here's the point. While it's a great Captain America theme, and it does very well during certain Captain America moments, it's not an Avenger theme. At the same time, I don't know what would be an Avenger theme, but... I just don't think it would be as bright as this. Really, when you think about a... bright's not a bright word. When I think of an Avenger theme, I think of sort of the same thing I would have with a Justice League theme. You know, when you think of the Justice League and Justice League... let's just think about this. With the Justice League theme. There's sort of a grandeur there and sort of a team-like feel. Again, Justice League Unlimited. Da 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 da, and the guitar solo. Again, you sort of, there is a feel of sort of a team aspect in that theme. You do not have that here. Again, it feels like a great theme for Captain America, but it does not feel like a theme for these Avengers. Again, it does not have those team tonal aspects within the melody. So, it's an okay theme, but I just don't think it works for this movie. And really, that's the same for the rest of the score, which is very omnipresent. You know, doesn't have a presence in the movie at all very much. And a lot of times it just feels like stock music, you know? There doesn't feel to be any drive, any soul, and any reason to be for the music to be where it is. You know, the only time I think I like the music of the score is sort of banner scene. And it's not even so much that I like it, it's just I like those scenes. And while I didn't notice the music all that much, it is a matter of that music I would say is okay, but that's only because, again, I like the banner scenes, but we'll get into the banner scenes more. With that, you know, this is usually where I, you know, say, we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors with animation, but since not a lot of time was spent on music. I'm going to go right into animation, and we'll take a break after that. Let's first talk about the overall style of the Avengers and how it measures up to Brian Hitch's artwork. Now, I actually compared this to, you know, the last Tom Sorokin review of Superman, Batman, Apocalypse, where you had Michael Turner. In that movie, you could look at that artwork, and I know this is also something that's more towards people who are comic fans who have read the comic, but it's still that sense to where you can, even a person that's not read the comic can look at it and say, well, this looks like a specific person's artwork. And they could tell, you know, and especially for comic fans, that looks like Michael Turner's artwork. You know, it feels like Michael Turner's artwork. It feels like Michael Turner's characters have been taken off the page and put into the movie. Here, yeah, you see them using Brian Hitch's designs, but it doesn't feel like Brian Hitch's artwork. It feels like somebody copying a caricature of his character designs and putting them in this movie. You sense it's his designs, especially since they have his artwork at the end, but again, it doesn't really feel like his artwork. I think the style feels flat. You know, when it comes to the animation in this movie, it feels more like the animation you would see in a television series in 2006. Not even 2006. You know what? It feels like an animation you see in a television series in the early 2000s. Not the mid-late 2000s, mind you. And this, again, it doesn't feel like a movie. Especially there's CG scenes to where, you know, it just makes this feel like a television series, not a movie. You know, and like, this is the first three episodes of an Ultimate Avengers TV series. I don't know what their plans were, but, you know, and again, the quality is just not there, and that's really sad. So yeah, with the artwork, it just falls flat. They're characters of Brian Hitch's artwork, and that, to me, that is a big miss on their part. Because I think they could have done a lot if they really were able to translate Brian Hitch's artwork to the screen. Let's go over character designs. And again, this is also going to character designs because, for the most part, they do kind of stick to what the character designs are. Again, like I said, they are caricatures, but again, it's because it's missing that soul, that sort of unique thing that makes it feel like, oh, this is Brian Hitch's artwork. But they do stick, to the most part, to the designs. Let's start with Captain America. You know, Captain America's design is very good. And I like Steve Rogers again. It's sort of another version of that idea of what the American sort of male soldier looks like. But with Captain America, it's an okay design. The changes here are they took away the wings. It's more of a rounded helmet. Some people have a problem with it. Some don't. I don't. But you know what? It looks good. He looks like a soldier. And I think overall, he's probably the best design in the movie besides Black Widow. But then again, I'm kind of being, you know, kind of, what's the word? I don't want to say judgmental, but kind of kind to that design for obvious reasons. But we'll get to that. Iron Man / Tony Stark, both designs don't make me believe that this is Tony Stark. I don't like sort of the wet hair down look of Tony Stark. And maybe that also has to do with the acting, which we'll get to later, but the design didn't make me believe it was Tony Stark, and the Iron Man design is just too bulky. It's too boxy for me, for Iron Man. You know, I like the more slick back look of Iron Man, which, you know, Iron Man's design in the Ultimate Universe would become a little bit more slick back. There were some of the sort of same bulkiness that you would see here, but it became more tolerable because they made it more streamlined. As they went later on into the Ultimate Universe. But here, it's sort of the original design. It's just very bulky, very boxy, sort of very classic, sort of 70s robot to me. And I just don't like it. It just looks weird and takes me out. Black Widow, Natasha Romanoff, again, next to Captain America and Steve Rogers, probably the best character design in the movie. Black Widow looks hot. But, you know, again, not much has changed with her costume. Really not much to her costume other, you know, it's black latex stealth suit. I do like that they went with the red hair and Natasha Romanoff, and they didn't change the red hair. You know, again, this screams Black Widow to me. Moving on to Hulk and Dr. Bruce Banner. Bruce Banner, just too scrobbly for me. You know, he feels too much like a weakling for me. And that also goes to Mark Miller. And again, we'll get to him later when we get into the story. Even though he didn't write the story for the movie, again, it's based off his work with Brian Hitch, and that's why I'm saying that, but he just seems too weak for me. You know, Bruce Banner throughout the comics, you know, while he's been sort of, he's always been treated sort of kind and that stuff, at the same point in time, he never felt soft. There was inner strength with him. You know, this Bruce Banner just feels weak all around, and I don't like that, and I think it's sad, because the character can be so... such a sentimental character, and he's sentimental here more due to the fact that the other characters being complete jackasses, but we'll get to that later. And then the Hulk, color-wise, okay, the muscles are okay, but the hair just takes me out of his design, and the hair is very important. You know, when you watch the Incredible Hulk movie, or for that matter, the Hulk and the Avengers, and the way the hair is there, and it's matted down to an extent, and how it's set up, that's more of a Hulk I'm used to. Sort of the spikiness here and the goofiness, it just makes the face, I think, look goofy of the Hulk. And it kind of takes me out. Thor, I always did like Thor's ultimate design, because I think I like sort of the... aesthetics of his suit with the circles and everything, and sort of the aesthetics of how it looks. It always looked interesting to me. My only criticism is I wish they would have done what the actual design was and done the full beard, because I just think it makes it look so much more distinctive from the traditional 616 universe, which is sort of that sort of classy heavy metal type of look of a Norse god. And here, it's more, I think, down to earth, especially when he has the beard. So I would have liked to see that. Giant Man slash Hank Pym. Okay design for Hank Pym. Giant Man looks pretty close to what Giant Man was in the 616 universe. Wasp, Janet Van Dyne. Again, okay character design. With the Wasp, I do like the color scheme more than the color scheme of the original Wasp in the 616 universe. I mean, there's really not much to say. It's okay, again, but it's not popping. And I think that's the thing. Both with Giant Man and Wasp, they don't pop out to me. And then General Nick Fury and Dr. Betty Ross, I like the hair, it's just something off about her design, but it's okay. But General Nick Fury, I love his design. I generally think that the Nick Fury of the Ultimate Universe is a better design than the Nick Fury of the 616 universe. And yes, they are sort of based around Samuel L. Jackson. But still, again, I do like that design. On to special effects and backgrounds, and I kind of am combining these because they both have the same problem. They don't pop. They just feel flat. They feel rushed. And it's just sad. Again, it goes back to that whole thing of, like, this feels like a TV series rather than a, you know, animated movie. And I said earlier, 2000, but even then, it still feels more like... You know what? It feels like a Marvel animated TV series from the mid to late 90s when they were doing Hulk and Iron Man and all of those. And that's a real drop of quality, especially when you're competing with DC. So, yeah. it feels, you know, the special effects didn't pop out. I mean, they didn't do anything technically wrong. But I'll give you a perfect example of, you know, backgrounds. When Iron Man is flying away from S.H.I.E.L.D. and, you know, that small little chase where he gets knocked down by Giant Man, and he's flying through the buildings, it's so obvious that it's CG. And it was obvious when he came out. It just doesn't feel like they put the type of quality that they could have put into it, and the effort that they could have put into the artwork of the backgrounds. You know, again, and that city, it's supposed to be New York City, and yet that feels like it could be any city. So that's definitely a miss for me. So with that, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about protagonist acting, antagonist acting, as we're, you know, because we're talking about acting in general, and we're going to talk about story. So we'll be back right after a word from our sponsors.
Everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And welcome back. And we're going to start with acting, and I'm going to break it down in this way. The really only antagonists are Cleanser, who really doesn't have much of a role, only in the beginning. He has much more of a bigger role in the second Ultimate Avengers movie, which is amazing that as bad as this movie is... I know it's my opinion, but there's a lot of people that have that opinion. But as bad as this movie was, they did make a second one. But we're not here to talk about that. But really, he didn't have a role, and Chitauri. Outside of that, really the only antagonist was the Hulk and Bruce Banner. So I'll leave him for the antagonist spot. With the rest, though, we can talk about protagonists. And some did a good job, some didn't. Let's start with Captain America, Steve Rogers, which is Justin Gross. I think he did a wonderful job of acting. You know, him and Bruce Banner were the characters I had the most sympathy for. Obviously, we'll talk more about Bruce Banner when we get to antagonists, because that's a much longer explanation. But again, with Steve Rogers, Justin Gross did a good job sort of portraying this soldier that's like woken up from a 60-year sleep and, you know, has found everything to change. And you believed in his emotions. So he did a wonderful job as that. And I also like sort of his sort of subtle sort of Captain America who didn't really know what he was supposed to do. You know, he knew he was supposed to be a leader, but he didn't know how he was going to be a leader in this new time with these new people. So I did like sort of the emotion he put into it. Moving on to Mark Wooden, who, again, I probably would say his name more like Wooden, which is appropriate because that's what I feel of his acting style for both Iron Man and Tony Stark. It's very wooden, very dry, not too dry, but very dry. It's almost as, again, you know what? It just feels like he's doing it for the paycheck. And I don't want to say that because I'm sure he had more respect for the role. But however they were having him play the role or whatever, it just came out so wooden. And it just didn't feel any emotion from him. And maybe, you know, I'm willing to accept that I'm probably, as all we all are spoiled by Robbie Downey. Let me say it again. Robert Downey Jr. Playing Tony Stark in Iron Man is sort of the quick wit that he has. But here, it just feels dry. It feels cold. It feels wooden and rigid. And I just don't feel any emotion out of his performance as Iron Man. Olivia Dabow as Black Widow Natasha Romanoff did, again, a wonderful job. Like Justin Gross, put a lot of emotion into her character. And, you know, it made me believe in this sort of former Soviet spy who's working for S.H.I.E.L.D., who was basically Nick Fury's right-hand gal, shall we say. And really helped be the glue that held the team together. Andre Ware did a wonderful job as Nick Fury. I can't remember if he played Nick Fury in the Ultimate Spider-Man video game, but, you know, he did a great job as Nick Fury, but I just think there have been people who've done the Ultimate Nick Fury much better. But he did a good job overall. David Bowie, he did a wonderful job, I think, with the accent. And, I mean, Thor didn't have many lines, so I don't feel he had really many to mess up, so he did a really good job. But I think one criticism is he doesn't have many lines in the movie. Grey DeLuise, veteran voice actor, you know, best known for playing Catwoman in the Batman the Animated Series, playing the Wasp here. She did a very good job of adding a good level of emotion to Wasp and Janet Van Dyne. I mean, you felt sort of the emotion of this character who wanted to be a part of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, literally to the point to where she's dragging Hank along, but, you know, she wants to be a part of S.H.I.E.L.D. She enjoys it, you know. And also sort of when she takes responsibility for their screw-up of a mission in front of Hank. There's a lot of good emotion there that DeLuise does, which I very much like. Nolan North feels like he's trying too hard to make us believe in this jackass of a character. You know, you don't like him because he's a jackass, but you don't like him because he's a jackass because, you know, it feels like he's being a jackass just because he wants to be a jackass, rather than sort of the unintentional sort of jackassery that Hank is known for. You know, they play this Hank more like a bully overall to everybody. And I just think that's the wrong way to play King Pym, you know? Again, this goes more towards the comic book, but, you know, Hank Pym is known for his abusive attitude to Janet. And it's just, I just don't feel, especially with the way it was written in the book, you know, the other people wouldn't have taken Hank's bull. So it just feels weird with him being sort of this jackass. And I just think they take it too far. And then with Nana McNamara, you know, as Betsy Ross, or Betty Ross. I keep saying Betsy. I mean, technically it's the same thing. Betty Ross wow, she won so much, and I really hated her voice by the end of this movie. You know, I hated the character most of all. And I mean, I guess if that's the way the character was designed, I guess she played it perfect, but you know, I just hated the character. Everything that came out of her mouth seemed so condescending, and you know, she's around this man that she's supposed to be in love with, but you know, she continues to place herself as a victim. It just came off the wrong way to me. And as for antagonists, like I said, Dr. Bruce Banner and the Hulk, and you know, the funny thing is, he's supposed to be the antagonist to an extent, and yet this is the character outside of Captain America that you feel the most sympathy for. Here's a man who, you know, he has this thing in him, and he wants to try to control it. He wants to try to use it for good, but everybody keeps shooting him down. Everybody keeps treating him horrible, and yeah, he loses control at the end, but instead of sitting there and saying, well, hey, he was able to control it for a little bit, let's see if we can take this further, you just throw him in jail. You know, you feel sympathy for him, and I think that's something Michael Massey did a great job of, making you feel sympathetic for Bruce Banner. And then with Fred, the Tuscorsi's play at the Hulk, I'm sure he had to do a lot of grunting. I'm sure he was very sore in the morning. It was a very decent job playing the Hulk. But again, I think there are people who've done better. So with that, let's move on to story. And the first thing we're going to talk about with story is, let's talk about the film's adaptation of the comic book source material. Now, as far as this, you know, movie's adaptation of the comic book source material, they take very, very lightly, because this is a very sort of light rendition of the actual comic book miniseries, the 13 issues that they take. Again, I told you earlier that I was going to sort of talk more about sort of Mark Miller's Ultimate Run and his comics, and you know, Mark Miller does have a problem that he can. There are runs of Mark Miller's that he does where he doesn't have this problem, and he does wonderfully. You know, the Marvel Knights Spider-Man comes to mind, which is an absolutely excellent run. It's really the first one. You know, Civil War is another one that sort of comes to mind. And even though it kind of does what his problem is a little bit, it's really not blown out of such proportion that it ruins the book like he usually does. But then there are books like Kick-Ass and The Ultimates and other titles where he does this. And his problem is that he's a good writer and he's great at setting up sort of these twists on the traditional idea of the superhero and sort of taking ideas that we have about the superheroes and sort of, turning them on their head. But he has this problem of bashing you over the head with the point. You know, he sets it up good and it's very subtle, everything, but then at the end of the book, you know, he has, I don't know what it is, but sometimes he'll feel the need to want to bash you over the head with the point. A perfect example of this, outside of the Ultimates, is, you know, Kick-Ass. You know, when this, again, spoiler for those who haven't read the comic book, and for those who haven't seen the movie, you know, when the main character tells the girl he likes, who's supposed to be his best friend, that, you know, oh, he's this hero, Kick-Ass, you know, she screams at him, slaps him, runs away, and then they cut to later at night at her sending him pictures and cell phone movies of her banging the, I guess it's the their high school's all-star black quarterback. It's just too much. I mean, from what I hear, they changed it for the movie to something different, and which I'm glad about. But, again, that was just too much. And the same thing was with The Ultimates, where, you know, they, again, it's very loosely based. You know, in the actual Ultimates miniseries, Kleiser was more in on the actual attack. There was actually issues before where the Hulk went on a rampage and just, like, killed people on his rampage of New York before the Chitauri attacked. And, you know, they had, Hulk eating Kleiser in that final battle, just, and more things on sort of the abusive attitude of Hank Pym with Janet, which led to Captain America coming to his place and beating the shit out of him. But, and again, it's, you know, he wants to turn sort of this dark look on these heroes, but again, he's pounding you over the head with the point. And Mark Miller, you know, when he is sort of led down the direction of being subtle with what he's doing, his writing is great. But when he's allowed to go free, he always, for some reason, feels the need to bash you over the head with the point. And now the reason I bring this up is because in this movie, while this movie is toned down from the actual material, and it's really more lightly based off sort of the collection of stories that is in the Ultimate miniseries, those sort of hammering of the points that Mark Miller does is still there. And a perfect example of that is, again, the whole Bruce Banner story. You know, there's a particular scene where he, you know, Banner is just pouring his heart out and trying to convince Betsy Ross in, you know, how this could help him, how it can help the relationship, and, you know, her just not having any because she's the victim. You know, again, just bashing over the point. And the reason I have a problem with it is, again, this is supposed to be somebody who loves him. I don't believe in, you know, her loving him at all. And it completely ruins the point of, yeah, she loves him, but, you know, she's just as much a victim as he is, and him not getting it. And instead of you feeling sympathy for Ross, you feel sympathy for Banner. And so it just doesn't work. And again, it's just the pounding over the head of sort of their problems. It just, a lot of it feels forced, which is, again, same in the comic books. You know, really adapting that, but again, it just all feels forced. So, I mean, a very loosely based adaptation of the comic book source material, but at the same point in time, they do add a lot of the flaws that the comic book series had, which is, again, Mark Millar's sort of force perspective that he does. Again, that feels more like I'm talking about the artwork, but I think that's the best way I can sort of describe, you know, the way he just hammers home that point, bonks you over the head with it. So, but, again, lightly based, they toned, again, because like I said, they had to tone down, I don't know if they had to, but they felt the need they had to tone down a lot of the darker sort of elements of the Ultimate universe. And I mean, I don't even know if it was present in the Ultimate miniseries. I know it was present in the Ultimate 3 miniseries of sort of Quicksilver and Scarlet Witches, which is characters that they didn't use that was in the Ultimate line, but they didn't use them in the movie here. But Quicksilver and Scarlet Witches, who's they are the son and daughter of Magneto. But their sort of incestual relationship, which becomes more prevalent in later Ultimate comics. But, you know, that, for instance, again, because they didn't include the characters, is completely omitted from the story. Again, Hank Pym's sort of abusive attitude with Janet is really not shown whatsoever. You know, in fact, they try to make you feel sympathetic to him, and it's like, no, I don't. Especially what I know about him. And I know there are some people, like my good friend Shag, who will, you know, argue for Hank's case. But in this case, it's getting, you know, it's one thing to show it and then have the argument, but when they completely ignore it, yeah, it just makes it feel like, well, we don't want to talk about this because we can't make you feel sympathetic, and we want you to feel sympathetic. So, very loosely based. I can't say that I like it very much. With that, let's talk about sort of the unity of the Avengers. Now, I say that because, again, another problem I have with this movie is, while this is supposed to be about the Avengers, a third of it feels like it's about the Avengers. And really, all of that third feels like during the fight scenes. The other two-thirds feels like a Captain America movie and a Hulk movie. And because of that, because there's such a focus on Captain America and such a focus on the Hulk, you know, the whole talk about sort of unity feels rushed, which, again, we're going to talk more about that in a second with the film's pace. But again, it feels... Yeah, I just don't believe in this unity that these Avengers just suddenly have. You know? And it, more importantly, it feels forced. You know? Again, and I'm not saying it's Mark Millar, because again, it's the adaptation of the actual writers of the movie for the film. But you know, when you have that first mission against Chitauri, where Chitauri that's infiltrated the base, and they're trying to stop him, and they just won't listen to Captain America, you know, who's supposed to be this legendary figure. It's like, it just feels forced, and like, well, we need to show the team not working together, you know, and they can show them not working together in, you know, a more subtle way, but again, it's that we need to bonk you over the head that these people just don't work together. And they are not united as one. And it just feels, again, like I said, forced. It, you know, it feels sluggish. And it just doesn't work to me. And then all of a sudden they come together and you really don't show them. It's like 2 second scenes of each. And that's just not enough for showing them compensating and then finally coming together for the Chitauri attack. And all of a sudden being able to work together. It just feels forced. And it also feels rushed, which is a great segue into the next talking point, which is the film pace. This film just feels rushed. You know, this film is about an hour and 10 minutes. And really, I don't know if they cut stuff out of the movie or what, but this film should have at the very least been an hour and 30 minutes. You know, I guarantee you put 20 minutes into the film and you go more deeper into who these characters are and, you know, what makes them who they are and, you know, the problems they have facing being a team and showing them starting to work as a team, it would make the film that much better. That's what makes, again, sort of talking about the Avenger movie here, but that's what made the Avenger movie so good, is you had all these movies that came, literally, entire movies that came before the Avenger movie that covered Captain America, that covered Thor, that covered Iron Man, that covered Hulk, and covered a lot of these characters and gave you insight into who these characters were and allows you to know who these characters are going into the Avenger movie. But you don't have that here. The whole pace feels rushed, and because of that, there's really no time spent on who these characters are, you know, their personalities, and why they have a problem connecting, and what allows them to connect. It just feels extremely right. You know, like I said, Thor doesn't have a lot of lines in this movie, you know, because he has that one scene at the beginning, and then he just comes out of nowhere, and I'm here to help, and I'm like, hey, where were you the past 60 minutes? It just, again, feels forced, and in this case, it just, the pace feels rushed. Like, well, we've been given a time limit of basically an hour and 10 minutes because it's a kid's movie, and kids won't sit there that long. So, we have to, you know, rush it. But just see, it's very amateur of them, because again, you know, the fact is, if you're not making a good movie and you're rushing the pace, it doesn't matter what the time limit is. People are going to walk away anyways because they're just not liking the movie. I know I had a hard time just sitting through this movie all in one sitting because at times it just felt boring. And a lot of that came from the fact that the stuff felt forced and it felt rushed. Let's talk about the fights. The fights are okay. Really the only good fight in my mind was the final fight with the Hulk. And a lot of that was, you know, the dichotomy of them working as a team and finally getting to work as a team. But at the same point in time, just, again, the fighting felt average. And it, you know, it didn't feel special. There was just really, I mean, outside of the Hulk fight, it didn't feel like it had any flow in it. It wasn't really until the Hulk fight that there felt like there was a flow to the fighting happening. And my favorite sort of scenes in that fight was when Thor and Hulk were fighting. I think anybody always likes when, you know, Hulk and Thor are fighting, because that's just, you know, that's just some good stuff. Final part we're going to talk about here is, let's really talk about what this was. This was Marvel's failed attempt to match the DC animated movies and animated series coming out at this time. Because you did have Superman Doomsday, you had them starting things like Wonder Woman and Green Lantern and New Frontier, you know, and of course, the way DC's dominated the animated market in the thousands with, you know, Justice League Unlimited, Batman Brave and the Bold, and all of this. And it's one of those things to where it felt like Marvel felt like it needed to be DC. And again, you can't be DC. You have to be yourself. And that's what makes the Avenger movie, again, sort of talking about it, but that's what made it so well, is them being themselves. You know, this animated movie, along with the other Marvel animated movies, you know, it just felt like they were trying to compete with DC, but trying to only do it halfway. And because of that, I mean, a lot of this stuff felt like sort of the same type of quality of the Avengers cartoon from the 90s and the Iron Man animated series and Hulk animated series from the 90s. And it just feels like bad quality. And it's just a complete fail on Marvel's attempt on matching DC. Again, a lot of the Marvel movies have this rushed pace. They have this sort of forced story, you know. And again, that's what DC does so well, is that their animated shows and animated movies they pick stories that have good pace and, you know, have great storytelling. And they're not afraid to do an hour and 40-minute movie, you know. A lot of these animated movies from Marvel are like an hour and 15 minutes at the most. And, you know, it just feels rushed. So, yeah, a complete fail in Marvel to try to compete with DC. You know, it's kind of funny. Marvel does the live-action movies well, but DC does the animated and sort of television shows better. So, I guess it equals out in a way, But yeah, I just find that funny. So, that's it for this review of Ultimate Avengers. Final rating. Now, I'm going to be generous and give it a 2, but I really want to give it a 1.5. I mean, there's really not much I can say I like about this film. It feels forced. It feels rushed. You know, half the acting is good. Half of it feels forced and wooden. The animation quality is just pitiful. You know, I mean, this is a major company. They should have animation that is better than this. And I kind of do find it funny is that when their animation is done in-house or with studios that are connected with them, like this is, it's bad. But when you have Sony doing Spectacular Spider-Man, and I know it's like an outside studio who does Avengers, and I'm trying to think of the other one that came. Wolverine and the X-Men. You know, again, studios that weren't connected to Marvel, they were outside studios, they were allowed to do these series. The animation quality is just incredible. I kind of find that funny. When Marvel really doesn't have its ultimate control of the studio, the animation quality is wonderful. When they do, it's horrible. And in this case, it's just horrible, and it's unforgivable. And just so missing the mark with the music. I expect so much more from this, especially from the Ultimate Universe, which, as much as I'm complaining about Mark Miller's story with the Ultimate Universe, and, you know, I love the Ultimate Universe. I love Ultimate Spider-Man. I love the stories that can come out of there, and I love sort of the music that can be inspired by those stories. So yeah, just completely missing the mark, completely failed attempt here by Marvel with Ultimate Avengers. 1.5. So, again, like I said, that's it for this episode. Remember, if you have any emails, comments, or anything that you want to say about this episode or any other episode, Remember, there are several ways you can do it. You can email us at absolution132@yahoo.com. You can send us comments on our Facebook page, which you can find by searching out Absolution Network. And, of course, you can leave us comments on the post or on the website page itself, which, of course, you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're at it, remember to check out all our other 132 production sites like Random Redbox, and of course, my podcasting site is part of 132 Productions, like Tokyo SOS, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. That site features my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, which reviews every Godzilla movie ever made. This month we have Godzilla vs. Biollante, and of course, my series of podcasts that I do on the Comic Book Crazy podcasting site, which includes the Comic Book Crazy podcast, which just released a special interview with J.M. DeMatteis, the Hexcast, which is a podcast which reviews every issue of Jim Balin's Terror, Witch of the Black Rose, and right now features a special 2-hour interview with Jim Balin and Holly Golightly themselves, the creators of the book, and the Comic Book Pitch, a new interactive podcast where you, the listener, sends in your ideas about your ideas for comic book stories. You, of course, you can find all that at the Comic Book Crazy Podcast Network, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And on the way in the coming week, like I said, is my review of Avengers with my free Comic Book Day interviews as well. Of course, while you're at all these sites, on the sidebar are our friends who do wonderful podcasts. Check them all out. Michael Bailey's Views from Wombax, which has a new episode. Yay! And, of course, From Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor. Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawlspace. Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers podcast. And Scott Gardner's 2 True Freaks! And of course, all our other friends, which you can find on the sidebar of the site. And like I said, that is it for this episode. Like I said, last week I wanted this episode to be out, but complications arrived, and that's why it's a week late. As such, you're going to have 2 episodes of Tom's Prerogative out this week. So on Thursday and Friday, keep an eye out on the Absolution Network for another episode of Tom's Prerogative where we will review Baka no Test. That's right, we're going back to anime, folks, for a funny harem series of sorts. Thank God for Netflix. Until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
A cursed samurai. Succeeded again in eluding my effort, but I am not worried, for one day you will fail.
DJ Clark Nova, don't sleep on it.